This testing, 1, 2, 3.
Ask questions, I'll answer, you see. Just the way the Heritage Man did. Whatever you wish.
Oh, well, I just want you to be Alice Paul, like we've always talked, that's all. But this time I want to get it down to the
record. No, but I mean you want to guide the questions.
Yeah.
So you guide the questions to be useful to you. I mean,
all right.
I just answer those.
Well,
then if you want me to elaborate, you can say so.
For the first 15 minutes.
I didn't dare elaborate with him. My first interview, I was so humble. So I think he would have had a better interview if I had elaborated, but I didn't.
I think it's different too when you're being interviewed for a publication, and compared to this kind of interview where I'm just interviewing you to get a lot of information down, which isn't necessarily going to be published. If it's published, it'll be just as a part of someone else's research then, so that ours can be a lot looser. And
I'd like to know before we begin. Just what did Sylvia Pankhurst say was this episode on the top? Because I have to write to the man and tell him what it was, because I said I can't remember anything about it.
Well, we're according to the outline that's in my head, we'll get to that in about 20 minutes.
Well, couldn't you just tell me now? What did she say?
Well,
where was the place?
I think what I'll do is read it to you.
He read it from Mrs. Irwin's book.
He read
Glasgow,
book.
And I said, well, I know that I never was on a roof in Glasgow, because I was never in Glasgow but for one meeting. When I was promptly arrested, didn't have a plenty of time to get up on a roof.
Wait a minute. Yeah, Sylvia Pankhurst put you on a roof too, Alice.
I know, but I wonder where the roof was.
Okay,
because
let's see.
Sylvia spoke also at the meeting, and she's the principal speaker at this meeting in Glasgow, where I she knows I wasn't on the roof in Glasgow.
All right, here we are. It says Glasgow. It says on August 20th, when Lord Crewe spoke at the great St. Andrew's Hall, Glasgow, Miss Alice Paul succeeded in climbing to the roof, and in the hope of being able to speak to the cabinet minister from this point, she lay there concealed for many hours in spite of a downpour of rain. When she was discovered and forced to descend, she was heartily cheered for her pluck by a crowd of workmen, one of whom came forward and apologized for having told a policeman of her presence, saying that he had thought she was in need of help.
Well, then that must be it, but I don't remember one thing about it.
Well, then later, I guess it means later in the day, when the women attempted to force their way into the building, the people needed no urging to lend their aid, and the police who were guarding the entrance were obliged to use their truncheons to beat them back. When the officers of the law attempted to make arrests, the women were rescued from their clutches again and again. Eventually, Adela Pankhurst, Lucy Burns, Alice Paul, and Margaret Smith were taken into custody.
Who was the first one?
A-D-E-L-A.
Yes, but
Adela Pankhurst.
Oh, Adela, we call her.
Adela?
Yes. She was Mrs. Pankhurst's youngest daughter.
Mm. And Lucy Burns, and you, and Margaret Smith.
And Margaret Smith was the niece of the Lord Mayor of Glasgow, I remember that.
Oh, she was?
Yes. Which gave us a little standing. But then it really is true about the roof, but isn't it strange I can't remember one single thing?
You don't remember the rain on the roof, but, well, even when the gates of the police station were closed upon them, the authorities feared that they would not be able to hold their prisoners, for the crowd shouted vociferously for their release and twisted the strong iron gates. It was only when the women themselves appealed to them that they consented to refrain from further violence.
Well, then, did she say what happened?
Yes. I'll read you one more paragraph. When Lord Crewe had safely left the town, the friends of the women were allowed to bail them out, on the understanding that they would appear at the police court at 9 o'clock the following morning. Nevertheless, though they arrived before the appointed time, there was no one to show them the courtroom, and whilst they wandered about in the passages trying to find their way, the case was disposed of behind locked doors and with the public excluded. The bail was escheated and a warrant was issued for their arrest before 9:05. At this, Mr. Thomas Kerr...
Oh, was it another? Would it be arrested over again?
No, this is the same one, because the night before, when you promised to refrain from further violence, No, wait a minute. You were bailed out.
That's right.
And now you're coming back for your
court
appearance.
But then when we came back, they dismissed the case. But then what was it?
Well,
we were arrested again?
No. Oh, yes, a warrant was issued for your arrest. But at this point, Mr. Thomas Kerr, one of the bailees, rose to protest and asked 2 minutes leave to find the defaulting prisoners, saying he was sure they were already in the building. But he was abruptly told that the court was closed. So he went outside and immediately met the ladies and brought them in before Bailey Hunter, who presided, had left the bench. But though the bailee saw them, he hurried away, while the fiscal tried to put all the blame upon him. The fiscal is the officer who prosecutes. The bail was never refunded, and the women never answered to the warrants, and so the matter was dropped.
I knew it was dropped. I didn't remember all
yeah.
these things.
No, I don't know.
Isn't the memory a strange thing? You know that it's so many years since I would ever even turn my thoughts to England and so on. But you wouldn't think you would ever forget spending a night on the roof, would you?
Well, this was 1909.
That's right.
On August 20th. So that's a long time ago.
That's the last summer I was in England,
And you had gone through so many episodes. I can see why you wouldn't remember just one. Now,
well, anyway, now I can tell him what really happened.
Oh, right. Okay, you think that you must have spent the night on a roof then if it was...
Yes, because I denied it. I didn't want to deny something I'd really done, but
yeah.
I didn't think I ever had been on a roof. Well, now let's begin with you.
All right, well... I thought that we might spend about the first 15 minutes just talking about your own biography.
All right.
And
you ask the question, and I'll answer. So I want you to get everything you
okay.
need before you leave.
Yeah.
So
well, can you could you give me a rundown of your?
No, you tell me what you want to know.
Okay, I will. What I need to know is some of your genealogy, particularly going all the way back to the Penns. Now, if you have this written down somewhere, I could just use that, but
yes,
I don't think
I'm going
you
to get
do.
My chart, so let's skip that for the minute.
Oh, all right. Okay, fine. Then, where were you born?
I was born in Morristown, New Jersey.
And
it's a little Quaker village in Burlington County.
And
it's about 9 miles out of Philadelphia.
And let's see, your birthday's in January.
January 11, 1885.
Okay, and I saw the pictures in there of your mother's family. They were Quakers. Was both your mother and your father a Quaker?
From the beginning of the Quaker movement, yes, in England. They all came. My first Paul ancestor was imprisoned in England as a Quaker and came to this country for that reason. I mean, not to escape prison, but because he was such a strong opponent of the government in every possible way.
Yeah.
And Paulsdale, you know, I told you this little village was named after him, this town of Paulsdale in New Jersey, which is now quite a big place. And his original home is there, and I think I have a photograph of it, which I could show you.
Oh, okay.
And on my mother's side, they were all Quakers. I have practically no ancestor who wasn't a Quaker. I don't know whether I had any who wasn't a Quaker.
Mm.
My father and mother were, and their fathers and mothers were, and their fathers and mothers were.
Okay, then why don't you give me a picture of your family then? What did your father do?
He was a banker, and he was president of the Burlington County Trust Company, which is the principal bank in Burlington County. And on director of other companies and so on.
Yeah. And, come in.
Who's that?
Is this your carpenter?
Who?
We've gotten into your father being president of the Burlington County Trust Company and on other boards. And, your mother was, could you give me some idea of your mother's education?
Well, I told you
training.
She was one of the first girls who ever went to Swarthmore. I think I told you that because her father collected money with this little committee and founded Swarthmore. And he sent his daughter there and other members of the family, women members of the family. My mother's first cousins went there, they were there with her. Anyway, she had an education, same as I did, in a little friend's school, Quaker school, in the town called Cinnamons in New Jersey, where she lived, was brought up.
Called what?
Very close, well, the name of it is Cinnamons, and I guess they still call it that. C-I-N-N-A-M-I-N-S-O-N. And I have something here, if I can find it for you, give it to you to read. It's the anniversary the other, quite recently, of the founding of Cinnaminson. And in it they give a photograph of my grandfather's home, which was the most, he was the judge of that community, and he was had the, probably, one of the biggest homes, with enormous grounds around it and so on, which was recently bought by Camel Soup.
Oh, really?
From the, which is so pitiful, you know, you can't keep these old homes. His, my grandfather's son, older son, inherited this property and died shortly after. And his widow, not knowing anything, I guess, about business at all, was induced to sell it for a large sum to the Campbell Soup. So then they demolished this whole beautiful old building.
Oh, no. Well,
that was her education. She went to a friend's school and then went to Swarthmore and then married her year she would have graduated, but she didn't finish.
But she almost finished.
Well, I don't know if she almost did or not. I don't know how long before she graduated she married, but I know she married the year she would have graduated. I believe it was a year.
Where did your father go to school?
He went to, I guess, probably, but I don't know. Probably the same friend's school, because my father's father died when he was, before I was born.
Oh.
And so I never saw him, and my father never saw him. And so he was brought up in the home of a, I presume a relative, another Quaker family. We always called them uncle and so on, because my father was brought up, I suppose they were, I don't know how close a relative, but I think a relative. And it was in the same section where my mother was born, very close to it. So he probably went to the same school, but I never asked him where he went.
I see.
And he died in my life before I was interested in where people went to school. I was just a freshman at Swarthmore. I was 16 when he died.
Oh.
So I didn't know very much about, I never cared to ask him where he went to school, I just never thought of it.
Did he die very suddenly, unexpectedly?
No, he went to Florida with my mother, just to get away from the cold, I suppose, and I don't know, stayed maybe 2 weeks. And then he was extremely busy, terribly busy, so he came back pretty soon, and seems to have caught a terrible cold at once when it came back and died very quickly from pneumonia.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
So?
That must have been a blow to you.
Well,
it
was
just that age.
I was too young to be much of a blow to me. Life went on just the same. Of course, it was a great blow, I presume, to my mother, who was left with four young children and all this responsibility.
Well, who took over all of his banking interests and things?
Well,
your
he
mother?
Was the president. They just, I suppose the vice president became the president. I don't remember.
Oh, I meant, did your mother then supervise the investments and so forth?
No, she didn't, and she wouldn't have known enough, but her brother, I do better when I put down, I think. Her brother was one of the board of directors of the same bank. And I remember vividly, every week when there was a meeting of the board of directors of the bank, my uncle came up and had dinner with us in the middle of the day, or lunch, whatever it was, came out after their bank meeting, and then went back to the bank meeting. So he, I think, more or less took
took charge of all the besting of things. And then the man who was elected to succeed, I presume the vice president took over, I don't know about that, but soon they had an election of the board of trustees, and they elected a president who was a cousin of ours, and who lived very, very, very close to us. And he, my father also had a very big farm, not big as the West Gold, but big as this part, about 300 acres. And my mother hadn't the faintest idea, I'm sure, how to run the farm. My father did it with no difficulty at all. He had a superintendent, and he gave him orders in the morning, and off he went. But certainly my mother had no idea how to run a farm or anything else. So this cousin, who was made president of the bank, whom we saw every day, I should say, he came in every day and looked, rode around the farm and saw everything was all right and gave directions. So everything went on all right. We didn't have any great, none of this is very important, but I only tell you because you asked me.
Yeah, well, I am interested in it. Alice, I'm still confused, though, on your brothers and sisters. Now, I know you had one sister who would come and live with you here in the cottage.
I had one sister who graduated at Wellesley. And while at Wellesley, she became what they call a student volunteer, if you know what that is.
No.
It's an organization that had students volunteer to go to foreign mission fields.
Oh.
Charlie?
Yes.
May I speak to you a minute?
Yes, you may. I'll be right there.
And she was very prominent in that movement in Wellesley. And when she graduated and wanted to go as a missionary to China, they said she was too young, and we know they had an age limit. You had she was wasn't old enough, so she went to went to University of Pennsylvania after she graduated Wellesley for graduate studies in Chinese, thinking she'd prepare herself to know the language and so on. Mm. And while there, she became suddenly interested in Christian Science, and deeply interested. So interested that, Charlie, I wanted to ask how you're getting on.
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm out in the back door.
Well, can you put them up again, or do you want Miss Dolly to put them up?
Oh, no, I put them in. I take them out and paint them, and then I put them right back in.
You can do it.
Oh, sure.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
Good for you. So, she then founded a little Christian Science church in our little village of Morristown.
Hmm.
And they built a little Christian Science church building, and she was sort of the soul of this little church, though she was very young. But that made her stop wanting to go to China because the Christian Science seemed to send missionaries. So she changed her whole life from that moment on. And devoted, in fact, her whole life she devoted to Christian Science. And then she studied in what they call the classes, which they give to all students, all people who want to be students. And then, through her teacher, who was a named Mr. Johns, and lived in New York. She came up and studied in New York, and he told her of this little cottage, which he owned out here, this very little cottage.
Oh.
This is no importance to your study, but I'll just tell you. And he owned other territory out here. And in this little cottage was one of his assistants. He rented it to him, living here. This porch wasn't on, and this room wasn't on. It was just his original little house. So she had become so deeply interested in Christian Science that he told her the great need of having camps for Christian Science children. So she opened a little Christian Science camp.
Oh.
Right here in this little cottage.
Oh.
And that was her purpose in taking the cottage.
And that's when the lake and everything was bought, is that right?
We bought the whole territory. She bought it, I didn't buy it. And then I was over in Europe at this time, and I remember writing to her and saying, well, now please don't undertake anything that's going to involve you too much expense and so on. And she wrote back and said she'd certainly be careful not to. But this little camp turned out to be a great expense.
Yeah, I can see
people wouldn't pay enough. But didn't want to pay enough. And so finally she felt it was costing her more than she could justify in doing, so she gave up the little camp. In the meantime, I returned from Geneva, where I'd been, and I came up to see her here in a little camp, and I bought almost a similar little one up in Vermont. When I'd gone up, I finally decided I couldn't live any longer in New Jersey with the enormous taxes which were on your real estate, which was simply wiping everybody out. And so...
Was that at your old family home?
No.
New Jersey?
We divided up our family homes, and one brother took one, and one brother took the other, and then my sister took our home in the town. We had three houses there, and I took one that was the least desirable, because I thought I'd be the least able to look after these places. And I didn't want to live in this little place, and I didn't want to pay the taxes, which were so enormous. So I thought I'd find a little home for myself, and I'd like to go far away from everybody and go up into the most remote place I can get, where we'll have some American people left and so on. So I went up to Vermont.
For summertime living?
There it is. There's a painting of it.
Oh, the watercolor?
Yes. One of my cousins who came up to visit me painted that while she was there.
Oh, that's a lovely house.
It's called Echo Lake. And the reason that I got to know the Senator Dale, who gave you the dishes you had this morning.
Oh, yes.
So, well, because we bought our headquarters in Washington from Senator Dale when we moved over from the old capital.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to know Senator Dale pretty well and his wife pretty well in that transaction. So Mrs. Dale invited me to come up and visit her in Vermont. And I drove up to Vermont and with a friend of mine from Holland who had come over and married an American man who was a cousin of mine. So we drove up together to visit Mrs. Dale. And while I was there, she showed me this enchanting little, I thought, like this very old house just across the lake from her. And so I bought the little house for a very small sum and lived there, I guess, maybe off and on, maybe 10 years or so. And my sister came up and stayed with me a good deal. But I was trying then to work with the United Nations, and it took so long to come down from this little faraway lake in Vermont to New York to work with the United Nations. And finally, I sold it. And then I came down to live with her all the time.
Oh, I see. When you were at the United Nations, did you try to commute on weekends?
Not on weekends. When I was here, up until this time, because this is the only time I haven't had Elsie Hill here with me, we always drove in together. First when it was out on Long Island, Hunter's College, whatever that place was called. Lake Success, wasn't it called?
Lake Success.
Yes. That's very close to here. So she and I had my car, she had her car, and one car, the other, we drove down together.
Oh, I see.
Every day to Lake Success, the whole time that anything connected with the woman question was up. And then, when they moved into New York, we drove into New York every morning.
I see. Well, now tell me about your, I have two questions. One is, did your sister marry?
No, she never married.
And what about your two brothers? Where did they go to school? And what were they interested in?
Well, this brother whose photograph I showed you over there.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, this little painting here in the living room is when he was a child. It's right over this winter desk.
Your desk? Yes.
His name was Parry Haynes Paul. Parry after my mother's family, and Haynes after one of our families. And he went to the same little Quaker school and graduated. And then he went to the University of Wisconsin and graduated. And he graduated in engineering. And he then joined the Friends Service Committee and went for a year to Russia under the Friends Service Committee to teach the use of tractors and so on to the Russians.
Oh.
And I remember he told me many times how he'd get up and before dawn and go out, because they had such a short season in which he could teach them. And all day long he would go over the fields with them, showing them how to use tractors and so on. That he did for about a year.
Hmm.
Then he came home and married this Jean Daggett, who's my sister-in-law now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very devout Christian Scientist. And she wouldn't marry anybody who wasn't a Christian Scientist. So, between the influence of my sister, with my sister, who was such a Christian Scientist, who put him in touch with Jean Daggett.
Oh.
She was a very great friend of this Jean Daggett, and so they got married. And my young brother then became not only a Christian Scientist, but a really very convinced one, I guess, because he became the treasurer of the church out in Haverford. And the rest of his life he lived as an engineer. And he was an engineer, a consultant engineer to, I think it's called the Mack Company, which manufactured trucks.
Oh, I see.
So he was there until he died a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now my older brother went to the same Friends High School, and then he went up to Rutgers College because he wanted to become a farmer. Did you ever hear of Rutgers?
No. Oh, yes, I've heard of Rutgers, but I never did. I didn't know that it was an agricultural school, too.
Well, it's mainly that.
Oh.
At least it was mainly that.
Oh.
I always thought it was mainly that. And my grandfather, my mother's father, was, I think he was chairman of the Board of Trustees, but anyway, he was on the Board of Trustees of Rutgers. So my brother went there. I presume he graduated. I don't remember whether he did or not, but I imagine. And then he went on to Cornell and studied in the Cornell School of Agriculture.
Mm.
And he inherited this family farm of my father's, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So he was trying to equip himself to take care of it all right.
Mm-hmm.
Then he returned and he was made the vice president of the bank, of which my father, no, he was made, I'm not sure, don't say vice president, because maybe he wasn't, I think he was, but anyways, put on the board of directors.
I see.
And he was on the board of directors until his death, which was quite a short time ago. And he continued quite prominent in the, I won't say quite prominent, but fairly prominent in the Quaker meeting in Morristown.
So he didn't turn Christian Scientist like the others did. Where do you fit in this lineup, Alice?
I was the first.
You're the oldest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then came my brother, William, the one that became the agricultural one.
Okay.
Then came my brother, no, then came my sister.
What's her name?
Helen.
Helen.
And then came my younger brother. My first brother's name was William Mickle Paul, because Mickle's one of our family names.
How do you spell that, Mickle?
M-I-C-K-L-E, I guess. I could look it up in the family Bible and make sure, but I think that's what it is.
Okay.
It's one of the families.
Is Perry's name P-E-R-R-Y, Perry? Or
P-A-R-R-Y. Perry.
Perry.
Okay. That was my mother's name.
Oh. She was a Perry, huh? Alright.
And her mother was Alice Stokes, that's the one I was named after.
And you went to this private friend school in Senamison, am I saying?
No, in Morristown.
In Morristown, New
that's
Jersey.
That's where we all went to.
Oh, okay.
My mother went
Your mother went to Senamison.
I think she must have. Yeah. I don't know that she did, but I know she went to a friend school. That's the only one I can conceive of.
Yeah.
That was near her home.
And when you got into
her mother and her father were almost, I would say, the heads of the meeting, the Friends meeting there, so I'm what we call the Friends meeting. I'm perfectly sure she would have gone to a Quaker school, so but I don't, she never told me anything about it. She told me a good deal about going to Swarthmore, but she never told me about the school. But I'm sure she had to go to that school.
What sort of Quaker life did you practice in your home? Some of the friends I know are don't have a lot of formalized practice in their homes, and others do. And I wonder what kind yours was.
No, of course I never met anybody who was the Quaker, and I never heard of anybody who was the Quaker, except the maids that we had were always Irish Catholics. And always, we never had anybody but Irish Catholics. But I never met anybody who was the Quaker, and I don't know, I suppose it was like all Quaker homes.
Yeah. Did you have the very simplified board, and did you have a lot of prohibitions?
Prohibition of what?
Prohibitions of anything that sprung from Quakers.
Well, what kind of things?
Let's see, some Quakers would would prohibit music.
Oh yes, we never had any music at all. I never heard anything musical in the beginning of my childhood, but later on, when I went to Swarthmore, the first time I ever heard, I guess, a hymn or anything like that,
okay.
And any music. But gradually, after my father's death, my mother's, of course, that was so early in my life. My mother, I remember buying a piano and engaging a teacher for my sister. I didn't have any time to be taught, I guess, or to practice or do anything, but my sister would. So we had music introduced.
Oh, I see. Did Quakers have
Quakers any... changed, you see, quite a great deal. In Swarthmore, for instance, we did have, we had the musical instruments, and we had them, although it was purely Quaker when I went there, and we had hymns every Sunday night. We had hymns in the general, some kind of a general assembly of all the students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I never heard a hymn until I went to Swarthmore. There was such a thing as a hymn.
And you'd never sung any songs, I guess, had you?
I don't believe so. Maybe we tried to, I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, what was your reading?
But you didn't regard as a repression, you know? You didn't know there was such a thing. You just knew all these gay maids we had were going off to dances and had a different life, but we just thought that was a sort of common people that did these things.
The lower classes?
Yes, the lower classes did these things.
What did you do for recreation and things then when you were
at
home?
We played tennis. I showed you this photograph of our house, this little painting of our house.
Yes.
Well, the whole grounds in front of where you looked at, that was a great porch around the whole building.
Yes.
And in front was a long, very great lawn. So we had a tennis court there. And that's the only game I can think we played at home. And we played all the little things that people play, checkers and such things. I don't remember what we did.
Yeah. And, well, I want...
And we read a great... I read just endlessly, ceaselessly, almost every book it seemed to be. We had a friend's library there in the friend's meeting house.
Mm.
And I took out every book in the library. And we had also a great part of these books here, well, those I had in my home.
Oh, is that right?
That I grew up with. Any number of them. There's a whole set of Dickens right in there I have to put away.
I
remember reading every single line of Dickens as a child over and over and over and over and over again.
My goodness.
So you just read whatever books there were.
Yeah.
And it was pretty nearly everything I can remember that you wanted.